sweetheart, well, it's time to go home. Good night, sweetheart, well, it's time to go home. I hate to leave you, but I really must say, oh, good night, sweetheart, good night. Good night, sweetheart, well.
If you're thinking about going back to school or continuing your education, you should thank Henry Ford Community College. Since 1938, HFCC has provided excellence and innovation in education and services to their students and their community. Over the decades, thousands of students have gone on to become leaders in their fields, and now it's your turn. The winter semester begins Monday, January 12th, and registration is already taking place. Remember, Henry Ford Community College offers a job skills guarantee, a credit transfer guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee that guarantees that your tuition rates will be frozen if you graduate from HFCC within 4 years. Classes are filling up fast, so call 1-800-585-HFCC today or visit us online at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
Hey loyal listeners, we know you tune into WHFR to hear the best in new music that you won't hear on other stations, but the last week of 2008 will be even better. From Friday, December 26th, to Thursday, January 1st, our DJs will be playing their personal favorites, the best tracks from the best albums released over the past year. Be sure to tune in and ring in 2009 by hearing the best of 2008, right here on the only station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This is Friday, December the 26th, and my name is Jay Koronek, and happy to have you listening to us today. I am live. We've been pre-recorded for the last couple of days with our winter season celebration special show, and you've just heard a pre-recorded show of Big Band, the best of WHFR's Big Band show in 2008 as chosen by Big Bill, our Big Band DJ. That's why we had to make him the DJ of that, because everything alliterates there. So we are live in the studio here at Henry Ford Community College. The college is still closed, no classes and no registration enrollment for next semester in person. And at least I think that's true. Sometimes they have a counselor hiding out with the security guards in the front building just for somebody who's totally, totally desperate. But I can't say that I have any confirmation of that at this point. I do know that the campus will open for in-person admissions and enrollment and other questions about the winter semester, which starts on Monday, January the 12th. But the school will open Monday, January 5th. So that's 1 week from this coming Monday. January 5, 2009. Start practicing, writing those nines instead of eights. And that's when you can get back in touch with people here at Henry Ford Community College. Otherwise, of course, you can check out the website, hfcc.edu, for all kinds of information about what's happening and how to enroll and what classes are available and so on. But we're live in the studios today, and we're going to continue with this edition of Local News and Alternative Views by taking a look at, as we are wont to do, the local papers. In this case, it's two copies of the Press and Guide, because the Dearborn Times-Herald, since it's a slow news period after all, is not publishing again until Wednesday, the Wednesday edition, January 14th. So instead of doing what the Press and Guide does, which is basically recap top stories of 08 for 2 weeks, and some other ones that we have here that we want to share with you today, the Times-Herald has chosen not to publish again until January 14th. Let's hope not July. I need these papers, or what will I talk about? Imagine Koronek having to attend the Dearborn City Council meetings in person. And the school board meetings in person? Oh, my gosh. Even to watch it on television. Pretty torturous. Oh, my gosh. So that's why we have reporters, and that's why we have newspapers to do this for us. And then we've got to read the papers. We've got to subscribe. We've got to make sure we buy the papers every week, and we've got to read them and think about them and talk about them. And we do highly recommend, if you are in the Dearborn area or some other place, get every local paper you can. That talks about the really local news, the news that the news in the free press are not going to be covering much of. Certainly subscribers, being interesting to see what's going to happen, but they're only going to get, and I misspoke last week, the plan is to only home deliver on Thursday, Friday, and Sunday. I guess Thursday and Friday in preparation for weekend entertainment news, movies and things like that. And of course, Sunday is always the biggest paper of the week with all kinds of classified ads, as well as comics and magazine sections and so on. And so they're going to work out home delivery for subscribers for those 3 days each week. The other days, the papers will be available at newsstands, if you can find a newsstand anymore, or a bookstore that carries papers. Many of them don't. It's true that News and Free Press are somewhat available at a number of, Barnes & Noble and Borders bookstores, the big ones, usually will have News and Free Press, and also drugstores. Generally, yeah. Okay. Well, let's take a look here at what's happening in Dearborn and the surrounding area. The resolution of one story we've been following, and that is charges against Judge Hulkren. Okay. Judge William C. Hulkren was brought up on some charges, and this is how it came out. Michigan Supreme Court rejects sanctions for Dearborn District Court jurist, that is Judge Hulkren. Here's the story from Jason Carmel Davis at the Press and Guide from last Sunday, December 21st edition. Phil Thomas, the lawyer for 19th District Court Judge William C. Hulkren, said that he and the judge are extremely elated after the Michigan Supreme Court refused Wednesday to sanction him for intervening in another judge's case following a meeting arranged by an acquaintance. The ruling ends a 2-year legal process that began with Hulkren inserting himself in a debt collection case and was pushed along, according to Hulkren, because of a vendetta, quote-unquote, against him by 19th District Chief Judge Mark W. Summers. Earlier this year, the Judicial Tenure Commission, JTC, recommended that Hulkren be suspended without pay for his actions in a mistaken identity case. Quote, what people need to know is that this is the first time in 20 years the Michigan Supreme Court has rejected a case brought to it by the JTC. That's according to Hulkren's lawyer, Phil Thomas. And Thomas went on, but for all intents and purposes, the case should have never been filed because and we're missing that section. Okay, sorry. Well, there you go. Anyway, that's been resolved. And of course, they think there weren't adequate charges there. We've reported here on this show the somewhat behind the scenes rumors and or truth is that although there's still, I think, two cases of discrimination that Mark Summers has brought has against him that are still to be adjudicated. One was thrown out for complete lack of evidence, I believe, and that stemmed from a connection with Hultgren, okay, earlier. So this case came later, I think, in the chronology here. Of course, Hultgren would see it as a vendetta because, well, he started this vendetta in basically supporting, we believe, and I can't say for sure, it's an opinion that's out there, that we do know that the court employee that was dismissed by Mark Summers, supposedly in a budget-cutting move, was the live-in girlfriend of William C. Hultgren. And that's not, I'm not saying anything negative about that whatsoever, about that situation. But Hultgren got mad, and they said that Summers, it was either sexual discrimination or religious discrimination. And the religious discrimination thing was just tossed out. There's no evidence whatsoever for that part. And sexual discrimination because she's a woman and Summers is a man. It sounds flimsy to me. But then the challenge to his reelection came from Candace Abbott. And there are rumors, again, that I have heard from credible sources, but as a news person, I don't have to say, that a large part of Abbott's campaign funds, and she spent a ton of money on direct mail, because I know how much direct mail costs, and I know how many pieces of direct mail I receive, glossy, published postcards and pamphlets and so on before the election and the primary, too, last August and in November. And that was funded by Hultgren and his friends, and as so-called punishment. So tit for tat, I'll get you if you try to get me. And who started it all? Sounds like a McCoy-Hatfield feud, and it's probably going to go on. Summers, and I did read the end of this article, even though I guess I left that page, that internal page of the Press and Guide at home. You can check out their website, pressandguide.com, to read the whole story. Summers said, hey, we can work together. You know, we're all justices here. And the Supreme Court found that they didn't need to sanction Judge Hultgren in any way for his unusual or inappropriate interference with this other case or this other judge's case. And while it wasn't exactly the right thing to do, they didn't think there was going to need to be any punishment on that, Summers said, business as usual. Let's get down to it. So we're hoping that that the two justices can solve their differences. The Summers has been reelected by a narrow margin. The recall, as we mentioned last week, has been called off. The recall request by Abbott, since that would have cost her and or other of her supporters money. Not too much, actually, but hundreds more dollars, and whichever way it went. And so the court case is done, and now there's just the only question is the two remaining quote-unquote discrimination cases that were brought against Summers. But again, they were brought against him pretty clearly in response to the fact that he, in trying to save money, dismissed some people, and one of them happened to be Hultgren's close friend. Okay, and so we'll leave it at that, and we just want to make sure that when it's adjudicated, fair is fair, and business goes on, and maybe they can't be friends, play golf together, but, we can still be good judges. We hope. Okay. Interesting, also in the front page of last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, Sunday, December 21st, Walmart employee locally here files $12 million lawsuit. I saw in the New York Times yesterday or the day before that Walmart actually was settling I believe it was discrimination cases nationwide, if not worldwide, for something like $374 million. That's the number that stands in my head, $374 million. I remember it distinctly because I was like, oh, that's between a quarter and half a billion dollars. That's over $250 million, which is nothing in terms of bailouts, I know, but it's $374 million. I'm fairly sure was the amount. Now, whether or not that that settled this case, because this case looks fairly recent, whether or not this is part of all those cases, can't say at this point. But what it was, just a little detail here, Dearborn resident Lue Kezi, an Arab American, alleged Thursday, that's last week Thursday, that co-workers, that is a week ago yesterday, co-workers at the Dearborn Walmart and some superiors would roll balls in his direction, then jump back as if the ball were a bomb ready to explode, implying that he was a terrorist. Kezi added that Walmart employees would make fun of his accent when he talked, and that store brass would give him tasks that weren't in his job description. People would also, according to Kezi's lawyer, Nabib Ayad, tell the man, "We don't like your kind, and you ain't going to last long here." So I guess certain superiors of his, or I'd say people would also. So I don't know if that's customers to the store or whatever, or employees. But they don't have very good grammar, do they? "You ain't going to last long here." That's even worse than Sarah Palin's grammar. My goodness. As well as being racist, of course, whoever said that. Anyway, that's a quote from Kezi's lawyer. Those accusations, along with several others, have led to Kezi filing a $12 million lawsuit against Walmart, claiming that the merchandising company fired him because he complained about discriminatory harassment he suffered on the job at the hands of fellow employees and supervisors. The lawsuit, filed Thursday in Wayne County Circuit Court by Kezi, who's 42, alleges the company allowed anti-Muslim and anti-Arab bias and taunting at the Dearborn Walmart, which is, if you didn't know, is located at 5751 Mercury Drive, just north of Ford Road. Kezi worked in the stock department from the time the store opened last March until August 14th, when he was fired after filing a written complaint with managers regarding the harassment. Ayid said Kezi was basically fired for following the rules, which means it was inappropriate. Kezi was born in Iraq but is a naturalized U.S. citizen. He immigrated 28 years ago and speaks fluent English, Ayid said Thursday during a press conference held in the parking lot of the Dearborn Walmart. That's when they had the press conference. "He doesn't wear traditional Arab clothing or headwear, but his physical appearance clearly identifies his ethnicity," I had added. And there's a picture on the cover here of, I mean, he could be Italian to me. Okay, wait a minute. Let's see that, which one is him. Well, the one with his mouth open, it says, the label of the picture is not clear, but it says Kezi speaks at a press conference Thursday. Well, the person to his right and left, the person to his right is wearing, it looks like a religious cap of some sort. That could be his lawyer, who knows? We don't know. They haven't labeled the picture there. I mean, is Kezi the man on the left? But it says the one speaking. Well, the man with his mouth open in this picture is in the center, and I'm telling you, folks, by the way he looks, okay, he could be Arab, he could be Native American, he could be Italian, as far as I'm concerned. What do I know? I don't see race and color. I try not to, even if other people tell me there is, all right? Looks like a real person, okay? What else can I say there? And as he said, all this is happening in our own backyard right here in Dearborn. All this hostility and assault has been created in an area with the largest concentration of Arab Americans in the U.S. We can't stand for this. And so the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations, Detroit chapter, Dawood Walid, said his group supports the filing of the lawsuit. And he says this speaks to a greater issue, as Walmart doesn't even have proper guidelines for filing complaints. Sadly, it's not an isolated issue. And seems to be true. Again, they have settled and paid out that huge, over $250 million, $374 million nationwide for, I believe, discrimination suits, not necessarily Arab American, but other kinds of discrimination. I know several years ago they settled a bunch of suits with women who said that they can never get they can never move up in Walmart employment levels, and they were harassed and humiliated by the men and so on. So However, Greg Rossiter, Media Relations, we look for balance at times here in the show, even though we do express alternative views that you won't see in other media and other places. I am proud to say that's what we do here. But in the paper, it points out, as a newspaper should, Greg Rossiter, Media Relations Specialist with Walmart, said he hadn't seen the lawsuit. That's a good way not to have a comment. I haven't seen it. Yeah, he had it in front of him, but he didn't look at it. So technically, he hadn't seen it. I'm just joking, Mr. Rossiter. But there's all kinds of ways that we know that public relations people can do half-speak, and it's possible. Anyway, but said Kesey was terminated for, quote, legitimate business reasons, unquote, which he didn't specify, of course. Rossiter also said Walmart prides itself on being an equal opportunity employer. While he said the process could be a long, drawn-out one, and added it's not a shock that something like this would happen in a community like Dearborn, even though the Dearborn Walmart made it known prior to its opening that it would hold a high volume of Arab American products and embrace the community. And he said, finally, in a quote here, there's a big difference between having respect for the people in an ethnic community and wanting to get their money. It's disappointing, though, he concluded. That's, again, from Mr. Waleed. So we'll see how that case goes, or maybe we'll find a follow-up, and that's what newspapers are for, that it's all been resolved. And maybe it was part of that other big thing, but it seemed to have come fairly recently, and so it may still need to be resolved. Now, on the other hand, you know, folks, whenever somebody continually, a company continually is shown to be guilty of discrimination of one sort or another against its employees and has to pay out millions and millions of dollars over a period of 10 to 20 years, going back 10 years in my recollection, Walmart has been criticized this way and has lost at least three major cases that I know of. It does encourage other people to file suit. It does. In fact, some attorneys will go after a company for you, file civil suit to get money for you at no charge to you unless they win. Wow. And they fight really hard, don't they? So they get their 10% share of the money. In other words, you know, the lawyer here, as I understand, most lawyers would get 10% of that $12 million. If he gets $12 million, if he wins, if he's found to be in the right here, that he was unfairly discriminated against and dismissed, Mr. Ayad. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. And I'm just saying is it does, you start getting a couple of lawsuits against you for a certain thing, a lot more people will show up at the door. Certainly the Catholic Church has found that to be true. Problem with the charges of molestation of children, primarily male children, by the Catholic Church over the last several decades in the United States, which are now being adjudicated. More cases keep popping up all the time from the past because they got the evidence. Yeah. Now, of course, they're hoping, I'm sure, that the church will just buy them off, even if there isn't the evidence, rather than a protracted court trial, because they've had enough bad publicity as it is. So, again, sometimes you get some spurious lawsuits filed that have not much grounds to winning, and they're just hoping the company will just pay them up to shut them up. Pay up to shut them up. Maybe a small portion. And just to save them the trouble of getting bad press that something else went to court. So we don't know which is right. The courts will decide, and we'll just follow along and let you know. I don't shop at Walmart because of business practices like that and how much they only deal with and help make a profit for China. For whatever reasons, I'm quoting directly from what he said. Our Dearborn mayor, John B. O'Reilly Jr., says he doesn't shop at Walmart. I think the store hadn't opened yet, and he said, I don't intend to shop at Kmart. And I'm not sure it was a political reason, social reason, doesn't have the quality products that he wants to buy or whatever. Yes, he has a job. Yes, he has a paycheck. He can afford to shop elsewhere. But I'm just saying, I actually don't think the company, I boycott many companies because of their corporate records of injustice to their employees and lack of foresight to the customers and the country. And you wanted to know, okay, I don't buy from Mobil Oil unless I'm desperate and my car's out of gas and they're the only station before I run out. You know, because Mobil is Mobil Exxon Mobil is one company, and Exxon has the worst record of environmental disasters. You remember the Exxon Valdez boat that ran aground and let go all of its oil, supposedly because of a drunken captain at the helm. Yeah, the captain drunk guided his own boat into the rocks. Yeah, that was smart. But Exxon has in many ways shut down all environmentalists and has played very, very unfairly with the media, trying to report stories. And so I don't buy ExxonMobil, okay? I mean, all of us, I think, have our reasons, some better, some worse, for buying some kinds of products and not others. Certainly, I try not to buy Chinese. And for some crazy reasons, I don't buy Japanese cars, although they make a lot of good cars. Isn't it strange, though, that I own a German car? Is that because my relatives were German? My family was German? I mean, I think it's a good car. It's top-rated, but Japanese have a lot of good cars and top-rated, too. And I still don't understand my anti-Japanese feelings, because I love Japanese food and Japanese people, and I haven't visited Japan, but I'd like to someday. That's not real clear in my head, but I just know I actually have gone into some Japanese dealerships and showrooms, and I found them to be inhospitable, unwilling to deal, prices too high, all kinds of things that I would also say is true of many U.S. car dealerships, too. So I've actually tried to give them a chance, I don't have a blinding negativity against Japanese automakers. In fact, I kind of like Honda. I tried to buy Hondas several times. Moving on. Another story covered here on this show for a while is the situation of our local representative, at least part of Dearborn has him, the west part of Dearborn and other contiguous areas, Congressman John D. Dingell, who is considered a Democrat from Dearborn, and Congressman Henry A. Waxman, a Democrat from California, announced Thursday, that is a week ago yesterday, their partnership for the new Congress. Now, remember, Dingell wanted to continue as the chairman of the Energy and Commerce Commission. He was offered a deal since he has been unapologetic about the fact that he doesn't want any fuel economy guidelines for Detroit automakers. Okay? Environmentalist, yes, but not in terms of the U.S. auto industry. And maybe if he would have allowed some of the bills for the last 10, 12 years to pass, out of his committee, maybe Detroit would have been on a better road. Maybe he could have forced a manufacturer in Detroit to get on a road towards better fuel economy and energy efficiency. They would have done it kicking and screaming, but, you can always say he was representing the people in his area, and Ford Motor certainly is right here in his hometown of Dearborn, so in a way, whether he thinks they're right or wrong, he is supporting the opinion in a good democratic way of people in his specific area. For whatever reason, they thought he's, older and he's had some serious health problems in the last couple of years. He's still been doing his job and so on. But they thought that maybe to help the committee get bills passed quickly when Barack Obama becomes President Obama on January 20th, that there should be a replacement. Someone, younger, more energetic, and in favor. Since Waxman is from California, he knows all about fuel efficiency guidelines that California has passed and wanted to pass more that have worked out for them. I mean, they had to do something. That place is so polluted. I was in Los Angeles about 10 years ago. I couldn't breathe the air. Oh, it was sunny. You wouldn't want to jog there. You wouldn't want to take deep breaths. It is the most toxic, fume-polluted area. I just couldn't believe it. Sunny and beautiful. Couldn't breathe the air deeply. Detroit has that problem too, but to a lesser extent. Just drive up north for a while, northern Michigan. Breathe the air up there, and then come back to Detroit and see if you don't notice the pollution that we really have and we suffer from all the time. Anyway, they said to Dingell, he said, no, I'm not going to leave. I'm going to be chairman. And they said, well, okay, you can be chairman for 2 more years, and then Henry Waxman, let him take over. Okay? We won't have the big battle, and we don't want to kick you out, but you could retire after 2 years. Because Obama's term is 4 years, right? So if he didn't get some bills passed in the first two, he had some bills passed in the last 2 years of his term in office. So they offered that deal. He said, no. No, I'm going to be chairman now, and I'm going to decide if I want to be chairman or not in 2 more years. Okay, so they had to go to the contest and the vote, and they felt they gave Dingell a very graceful way to bow out, and he said no. And so he got voted out. Okay. But what they did was, is they made John Dingell the chairman emeritus. Oh my goodness, with great honor, they made him a chairman with no power, but intended to work closely with Waxman on all committee business. Waxman, a California congressman, as I said, who has pushed for greener automobiles, defeated Dingell in a contest over the committee chairmanship for the 2009 Congress. As part of their partnership, Dingell and Waxman agreed that, number one, Dingell will be the lead sponsor of the national health care legislation of the committee, will consider, and play an integral role in negotiations with the U.S. House of Representatives, U.S. Senate, and the Barack Obama administration. Again, this is what I suggested to him. This is what I, not that anybody listened to the show, but I said, you know, your dad was in favor of single-payer health care. Obama says he's going to change things for the better. He hasn't said he's going to go that far. Universal health care, single-payer health care, which I think is the only answer. It's the best answer. It's the clearest answer. It's what John Dingell's dad wanted, okay? And I said, this would be wonderful if you could achieve what your dad hadn't been able to achieve, which you couldn't achieve. So they gave him that specific task of being liaison throughout the whole government on national health care policy, and but through that committee. So that's real nice, isn't it? And made it official. So it's not just his proposing introducing bills, but he's got a little directive now of the Democratic Party behind him to move between the House, the Senate, and the Obama administration on that issue of national health care. And I just hope he doesn't compromise and waffle his way out of things. He's always talked about, well, we got to listen to all parties and come up with a compromise. Sometimes you just can't compromise because you ruin the whole idea. Okay? You get a third, fourth, fifth-rate idea that shouldn't even exist. Sorry, that's my opinion. And I've seen government work. I've been part of the political process, not as an elected politician, but as a public lobbyist for Common Cause for 3 years, not paid as a lobbyist, but I was part of the group. I was head of the Dearborn chapter of Common Cause. We had local chapters that wrote letters, and we had conferences and lectures. We visited John Dingell's office one time, basically he didn't like what we had to say about campaign fundraising. Oh, well. Okay, great. Great person, and they have given him this task. Secondly, Dingell and the others work closely with the subcommittee chairs and the committee members on the major issues before the committee, including energy and climate change, telecommunications, and oversight of the Food and Drug Administration. And lastly, Dingell will serve as an ex officio member on all the energy and commerce subcommittees. Yeah, if he can make it around all those committee meetings at the same time, and we'll have a suitable staff to assist with this work on committee business. So they're going to give him a couple more staff members to do the research and the typing and so on for him. Dingell said this, quote, I intend to be an active and enthusiastic leader on the committee, and I appreciate the efforts of Chairman Waxman to partner with me as we move into the 111th Congress. Henry and I have been able to work together in the past and agreed on most issues, and even in areas where we've disagreed, probably that auto industry thing, right? He went on, he finally said, together we have passed important legislation. Because of the work we've done together in the past, Energy and Commerce has been one of the most successful, innovative, and productive committees in the House's history. And the work before us is going to be a big challenge, he said, and so on. And, of course, Waxman is glad that Dingell agreed to do this. So, sounds like a big challenge for someone who is in is up there in years. I know he's up for it, and we certainly wish him well with the special challenges that he's been given now as sort of, you know, friendly payback. You don't want John Dingell as an enemy, certainly. So I think that was a good thing to do after the fact. In the spirit of the Obama campaign, make your enemies your friends, or keep your friends. Don't let your friends become enemies. Okay, this is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek with you today for December the 26th, 2008. Let's see if we have public service announcement of some sort here. Here's a good cause. Let's listen to this message. Non-commercial, too.
Baby can't stop crying. She needed more than a little love to see her through.
500,000 babies are born too soon.
The sun just can't keep shining. 'Cause it's much too late. Baby's gone for good.
And for so many, too soon means too late. Thousands of premature babies don't survive. But it's not too late to do something about it. You and the March of Dimes can make a difference. Together, we can make the research and education possible to reduce premature births in this country.
The sun will still be shining. If tomorrow comes, baby's home for good.
Log on to marchofdimes.com and support our research. You and the March of Dimes. Let's start saving babies together.
Henry Ford Community College has been providing excellence in education for 70 years. As the college celebrates its 70th year, keep an eye on hfcc.edu for upcoming events related to the anniversary, including a special concert on February 28, 2009. Achieve your dreams, and it starts with a visit to hfcc.edu or by calling 1-800-585-HFCC. Start your education at Henry Ford Community College. Your best choice, guaranteed.
Tune in to WHFR Dearborn from 8 p.m. until midnight, Friday evenings, for the Outer Limits, featuring the return of the Equinox program from 8 p.m. until 10 p.m. and, of course, Skrock and your Batal from 10 until midnight. The Outer Limits, only on WHFR Dearborn, the station waving at the kids as they rock out in the pagoda room.
Pretty scary experimental show. Remember, they're all of our shows for the next week, starting today, all the way through next Thursday night, are going to be the best of the new stuff that we were playing this year, 2008. So it's a kind of great little summary of what our DJs think the best things were that were released this year. And, of course, in terms of the big band show that we heard today from 10 until 1, that was the, you say, well, those weren't new songs. Well, in some cases, those were new interpretations of songs from the big band era, new releases this year. And so even if it was a new Frank Sinatra release this year, and there was a whole bunch of them, I had some sort of anniversary for Frank Sinatra's birth or death or first time at Capitol Records or something, and there was a whole flurry of re-released CDs from Frank Sinatra, his labels, and that's fine. Some good collections came back out there to be available. So anyway, the best of WHFR 2008 music shows. I should mention that coming up at 2 o'clock today, it'll be the Highway 61 Blues Show. Normally with Joanne Korchinska. Today, Joanne has left behind her list of the best of 2008. She's visiting with her sons in California, her family in California. We'll be back next Friday. And so I'll be hosting the first couple of hours, and I'll just be going down her list. I got the list, folks. We're going to play the best blues releases, according to Joanne Kay here, our blues music director of 2008 today. So you might want to take your pen and paper out, and pencil and paper, your electronic planner, whatever you got, and scribble down some notes, crayon, you know, shirt sleeve, and scribble some notes about the best of the blues releases for 2008, according to Joanne Kay. And we'll also be doing a ticket giveaway in the second hour today for a big blues event coming up next weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend. And so you get a chance to win something, too. And that'll go on for 4 hours. We hope to have a new DJ who has a great history here at WHFR, holding down the Highway 61 crews, steering us along for the last 2 hours. So I'll let you meet him when he gets here. Okay, this is Station Making Waves, WHFR.FM. That's our website, too, WHFR.FM. You can always listen to this show as a podcast any time of the day or night from our website, WHFR.FM. Just click on the journal button, big button on the homepage, and then you have to make a big choice as to whether or not you have a Windows Media Player. If you have a PC of some kind, too bad for you, but you probably have a Windows Media Player that'll kick in when you click that button, or choose some other player button. Okay, some of you have Real Player, it's called. Some of you might have QuickTime or iTunes. iTunes, very popular for Windows and for Macintosh computers. And so make the big button choice, and then you'll get a list of exactly what you need. You know, you pick the journal show by date. So you better know what day it is, which Friday you want to listen to. I thought it was supposed to go back 12 weeks. It's going back, I don't know, 20 weeks or something. It's scary what I said 20 weeks ago. That's certainly scary. Well, getting back to the show, to a couple of quick stories here in the pressing guide from Wednesday, December 24th. I saw this press release that went out from the state of Michigan. Home heating assistance is available for Michigan residents. The Michigan Public Service Commission, your government at work, Winter Protection Plan. It prevents utility shutoff for seniors during the winter heating season from December 1 through March 30th. Typically, to be a senior, you'd have to be 65 years old, okay? Now, maybe if you're on Social Security, maybe that would automatically qualify you. So the article does not say who are seniors and who are not, but I just thought I'd mention that seniors typically is someone who has turned the age of 65. It says, when the winter protection plan ends in April, though, here's the small print, spoken big, you are still facing utility shutoffs due to outstanding balances carried forward from the protected winter months. And there are a number of resources available to assist consumers, particularly seniors, with limited incomes. Utility companies have a variety of programs to help customers. You can call DTE Energy. They have a payment assistance program, 800-477-4747. Residential Billing Department, Consumers Energy, payment assistance program. They have a number. State Emergency Relief. That's ESER. You can apply at local Department of Human Services offices. And they have phone numbers. And also the Heat and Warmth Fund, which is called, nicknamed THAW, THAW. They have an 800 toll-free number, 800-866-8429. THAW provides energy assistance to low-income residents and to utility customers who are unable to pay due to an emergency. Applicants must have exhausted all programs. All the other ones, I guess, above, to be eligible for THAW. But there's hope. So call some people. Get some people to call for you. Get some numbers from whoever you need to. Okay, just one other quickie story. Well, it's not so quickie. It's unfortunate. But since my dad worked at Chrysler Corporation, Trenton Engine Plant for many, many years, Is that still down there? Did they close that? Anyway, here's a story about Trenton from Ben Barrett at the Heritage Newspapers. Plant idling creates big concerns for residents of factory town Trenton, Michigan. It is bitter news that the city's largest taxpayer, Chrysler LLC, is temporarily idling all 30 of its auto plants in North America. Operations at the Trenton engine plant, yeah, it's still there, okay, on Van Horn Road ended with Friday's shift, that's last week Friday, affecting about 1,130 employees. It and the other 29 plants will be closed for at least a month. However, just hours earlier Friday, last Friday, the federal government did approve the $17.4 billion emergency bridge loans for troubled Detroit automakers, that is Chrysler and GM. Ford said they didn't need money right now. And Sean Morgan, senior manager of corporate business affairs at Chrysler, said the receipt of federal aid does not change the plan to halt operation because it does not change the reasons behind the decision. She said that with sales down, it is unnecessary to produce more vehicles at this time. Plants will reopen no sooner than January 19th. Trenton Mayor Gerald Brown said he hopes the automaker receives what it needs from the government to resume production after that date. The news release Brown received from Chrysler said plant employees will continue to receive pay during the idle period. And so he said, quote, it doesn't appear financially to impact them. So that's good. Get a month off with pay, or maybe 80% pay, something like that. Morgan said employees will receive a supplemental portion of their salaries. While this will not directly impact the city yet, Brown said there will be an indirect ripple effect to businesses and suppliers linked to the automobile industry. Trenton Engine employee Ted Walling of West Bloomfield Township said workers knew ahead of time the plant would close. Well, that's a heck of a drive-in, Ted. Got to drive all the way from West Bloomfield? Kind of the high-rent district out there, isn't it, too? Every day? It's 45 minutes drive, isn't it, from West Bloomfield to get down to Trenton Engine? Good for you, I guess. I hope you're driving a energy-efficient automobile. I wonder what kind of car he is driving. Mr. Walling said the closures don't worry him because he's confident he'll be coming back to work. That confidence comes in part from the ongoing construction of a new facility called the Phoenix Engine Plant, adjacent to the Trenton Engine Plant. Though operations at Trenton Engine are idle, Brown said he hadn't heard anything that would indicate construction at the new site would be stalled. The new plant is part of a $730 million investment and is scheduled to begin production in 2009. That's next year, folks. It will employ 485 full-time workers. It is one of three plants Chrysler planned in the United States to produce a new family of fuel-efficient V6s. V6 engines. Of the three, Brown said the one in Trenton is the furthest along and the one intended for Wisconsin is not moving forward. He said the engines the plant will produce are important to the future of Chrysler. If Chrysler is bought or merges with another manufacturer, Brown said the new party would do so because it had an interest in the future of its product lines. Trenton Engine opened in 52. And so there you go. My father worked there for the last 25 years of his career. And torturous job it was, causing him several health problems that eventually caught up to him. But you can't sue because it was like, you know, wear and tear arthritis and stuff like that. You know. Okay. This is the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. Today is the beginning of, it's two holidays. One, the beginning of Kwanzaa. Kwanzaa is a celebration in the United States of African traditions by African Americans. As I understand it, it started in 1966, so it is definitely a created celebration. Although Christmas, you know, really wasn't celebrated by Christians. It was taken over by the Christian churches back in, you know, 1,000 years ago or whatever, because it was a time when pagans used to celebrate the winter solstice. And Druids, too. And Druids are pagans? They had their gods. Anyway, the Romans, who were pagans, they had their gods, too, didn't they? In any event, they had the holiday called Saturnalia. And so, you know, Christianity is made up mainly about the resurrection, you know, Christ dying for your sins and so on. And that's Easter time, big time celebration within the Christian church, churches. And yet Christmas, they're fudged because historically it's pretty clear the historical Jesus was not born in December, even allowing for the change in the calendars and that. He was born in the springtime. Pretty clear from numbers of scholars and experts and sources, if you say there was a historical Jesus, he wasn't born in December, okay? But the Christian churches said, hey, we got to get some Christianity into these pagan celebrations, and so we'll co-opt it, and we'll make a holiday called Christ Mass, and celebrating the birth of Jesus, and that will co-opt them, and you know, they can come to our party instead of going to their parties, and eventually they'll all become Christians and believers, and yeah, it worked. Okay. So, Happy Kwanzaa goes on for the week, and supposedly, somewhat like Hanukkah, which is just concluding now, each night, supposedly, African-American families will talk about and briefly talk about and have respect for African traditions, which are still important and carry with them and were part of their ancestors' experiences, even if they never directly celebrated anything in Africa. And so it's worthy of, you know, some respect. Absolutely. I didn't like Hanukkah for a long time, I need to say, as alternative opinion here, because I thought it symbolized the successes of violence. In other words, there was battles going on, and the Jews had to defend themselves and defend their temple and win it back, and then they discovered they didn't have enough oil to light the to keep the candles lit and the holy fire, if you will, or something like that. I'm not being disrespectful. I'm just paraphrasing wildly here, would go out. Okay, so the temple's flame as a religious sort of symbol should not be allowed to go out. And they were afraid that that was going to happen. And a miracle happened, and somehow the oil just kept burning and burning and burning and went on burning until the new supply of oil came 8 days later. And so it looked like it's tied into that victory in 165 BC, after they took back the Great Temple in Jerusalem. And there's an interesting article that I don't have time to read, but Hanukkah lights can symbolize nonviolence too, a new way of life, lighting the candle so maybe you'll never have to do battle again, kill again. And so I was glad to read this, and it's an interpretation by a professor of religious studies at the University of Colorado at Boulder. His name is Ira Sherness, and good for him in writing about that. He also has a great book, American Nonviolence, The History of an Idea. I'm personally a pacifist, and mentioned that before, and I do think the only way to go through life is to find a nonviolent resolution to any problems or conflicts, to try to minimize conflicts, and obviously weapons and nastiness and bigotry and racism and all that that causes violence is not part of my plan. Boxing Day. All right, let's take a look at that. That's today, specifically, in many places of the world, although in some places it's moved to the 27th, not the 26th. So here's the Wikipedia statement about it. It's a public holiday in the United Kingdom, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, Hong Kong, and countries in the Commonwealth of Nations with a mainly Christian population. Okay, not here in the U.S. We don't celebrate Boxing Day here in the U.S. In South Africa, this public holiday is now known as the Day of Goodwill. It is based on the tradition of giving gifts to less fortunate members of society. Contemporary Boxing Day in many countries is now a shopping holiday associated with after Christmas sales. That means contemporary, not religious. Okay, it's secular holiday. So there you are. Okay, and I was over at the Fairlane Town Center this morning, briefly, not to buy anything, and there was nobody there. I was at the post office, too, sending back a big box. I thought that was ironic. On a Boxing Day, I'm sending a box out. Nobody there either. So nobody shopping unless I missed it. You know, maybe it started 5 a.m. or something. Nobody shopping because even though there might be sales, they did start their sales a little earlier this week. And I guess people just don't have the money to continue shopping. So I didn't see it as a shopping day today. Supposedly it's one of the bigger shopping days or the second biggest day after Thanksgiving, the day after Thanksgiving. By the way, this day is historically England's name for St. Stephen's Day. St. Stephen or St. Stephen, it's S-T-E-P-H-E-N, was the first Christian martyr. St. Stephen was the first Christian martyr, being stoned to death in Jerusalem around A.D. 34 or 35 on the 26th of December, which is a public holiday in some countries or areas in Europe. In the U.K., Germany, Alsace, that's the northern part of Alsace-Lorraine area. That's in fact, in between France and Germany, I believe, and Catalonia, too. And around the world with predominantly Christian populations. In the Eastern Orthodox Church, St. Stephen's Day is celebrated on the 27th of December, although in Greece, the Greek Boxing Day is also celebrated as a public holiday on the 26th of December and is not related to the English version. By the way, St. Stephen, he was stoned to death for his beliefs, and I thought this was interesting. As he was dying, he begged people not to revenge his murder. And so that made him a saint, I guess, not only proclaiming his Christianity, but also for his forgiveness of the people that caused his death. Okay. It is interesting in some places, because of the connection with shopping, they move Boxing Day to the 27th. Okay, so that just means that the sales, well, there's a holiday and places are closed, so that the sales will happen on the 27th instead of the 26th. It wasn't a very good idea how that worked out. Way back in the earliest days, it was... and it's not clear because I went to a couple other sites, did tremendous research here. Okay. Some people think that the name of Boxing Day comes from the need to rid the house of empty boxes the day after Christmas. That is false. That is very, very, very false. One of the ideas was that, especially in England, is that the servants, the tradespeople that helped the family, the mansion, the rich people, they would have to work on Christmas Day because of the celebrations and, you know, the food and all that's required. And so on the 26th, the day after, they get the day off. And before they leave for their own little personal holidays or celebrations, the families would give to the tradespeople and to the servants little presents. Cool. That's just one little teeny things that might have happened. And you can look up on the internet Boxing Day, which is not celebrated in the United States. Although the feast or the anniversary since Stephen's martyrdom is in there too. He got boxed to bits, didn't he? Got boxed. Badly boxed. Okay. Bad joke. All right, so for those celebrating the Feast of St. Stephen, it sounds so much classier than saying Feast of St. Stephen, good luck to you. And let's try not to keep the holidays tied into crass commercialism. That doesn't make any sense at all. Try to think of good things. I know one of my previous wives used the day after Christmas and the week following Christmas as, you know, part of the 10 days of Christmas to find things that she didn't need to wear, clothing mostly, anymore, and turn it into Salvation Army for a tax credit, of course. But nonetheless, it was a good thing to do. Recycle, reduce, reuse, all that stuff. So however you have celebrated the holidays so far, good luck to you. And we're going to close the show here with... very popular editorial opinion from the New York Times night before Christmas. That is Wednesday, December 24th, the Christmas Eve day. Thomas Friedman is a major economist. And this editorial has been circulating wildly on the internet. People can email it and forward it to their friends. It's called Time to Reboot. So we'll conclude today's journal show for December 26th with this. From Thomas Friedman, Thomas L. Friedman. I had a bad day last Friday, but it was an all too typical day for America. It started well on Kai Sai Chow, an island off Hong Kong, where I stood on a hilltop overlooking the South China Sea and talked to my wife back in Maryland, static-free, using a friend's Chinese cell phone. A few hours later, I took off from Hong Kong's modern airport after riding out there from downtown on a sleek high-speed train. Returning to Kennedy Airport was like going from the Jetsons to the Flintstones. The ugly, low-ceilinged arrival hall was cramped, and using a luggage cart cost $3. Couldn't we at least supply foreign visitors with a free luggage cart like other major airports in the world? As I looked around at this dingy room, it reminded me of somewhere I'd been before. The luggage hall in the old Hong Kong Kai Tak Airport. It closed in 1998. The next day I went to Penn Station, where the escalators down to the tracks are so narrow that they seem to have been designed before suitcases were invented. The disgusting trackside platforms apparently have not been cleaned since World War II. I took the Acela, America's sorry excuse for a bullet train, from New York to Washington. Along that way, I tried to use my cell phone to conduct an interview, and my conversation was interrupted by 3 drop calls within 1 15-minute span. All I could think of to myself was, if we're so smart, why are other people living so much better than us? We can't continue in this mode of dumb as we want to be. We've indulged ourselves for too long with tax cuts that we can't afford and public schools with no national standards to prevent illiterates from graduating. To top it off, we've fallen into a trend of diverting the best of our collective IQ to people doing financial engineering rather than real engineering. Our present crisis is not just a financial meltdown crying out for a cash injection. We don't just need a bailout. We need a reboot. We need a build-out. We need a build-up. We need a national makeover. That is why the next few months are among the most important in U.S. history. Because of the financial crisis, Barack Obama has the bipartisan support to spend $1 trillion in stimulus. But we must make certain that every bailout dollar is spent wisely. It has to go into educating scientists and engineers, paying for research, and building the most productivity-enhancing infrastructure. I'd like to see fewer government dollars shoveled out and more creative tax incentives to stimulate the private sector to catalyze new industries and new markets. John Kennedy led us on a journey to discover the moon. Obama needs to lead us on a journey to rediscover, rebuild, and reinvent our own backyard. So take care out there, folks. This is WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves. Let's keep stirring things up.